Welcome to This is Robotics, radio news, podcasting news and commentary from around the world. Please join us for today's radio news report with your host, Tom Green, for news, analysis, and commentary from the wide world of robotics. Radio News is a production of Asian Robotics Review, your most trusted news resource in global robotics. And now, here's Tom.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the May episode of This is Robotics. I'm Tom Green, your host and fellow companion on this episode's journey into the wild world of robotics. Thanks for joining us. Our global audience is reaching 60,000 pairs of ears. That's like the attendance numbers at Yankee Stadium. And we love every earlobe out there, truly. How many earlobes is that? That's 120,000 earlobes. We love 120,000 earlobes. Thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much for your loyalty month after month. We really enjoy your presence. May 1st was Infertility Survival Day, and our lead story tells of robotics riding to the rescue. The people who are surviving infertility number 80 million. Well, actually, 80 million couples, that's 160 million people worldwide, suffer from infertility of one form or another. One of the cures is artificial insemination, or IVF, which stands for in vitro fertilization, which is a very lengthy, expensive, and we've just learned a very unpleasant journey for many women. The robotics end to this story is really wonderful. A young Spanish company has come up with an inexpensive, painless way to be fertilized. We dedicate that first story to all the couples in the world going through this expensive uncertainty. We also present a first ever lost and found robot for those with dementia. This robot could become a household pal for millions. Are humanoid robots hand in hand with artificial intelligence crossing the Rubicon together, the point of no return? We offer up a story about how far this humanoid and AI couple has gotten crossing the Rubicon. Are they halfway? Are they just dipping their toes? Or are they already on the other side? It's an amazing update, so hang with us for the full story on humanoid robotics and artificial intelligence converging as they cross the Rubicon. After that, there are glowing reports on India's economy, technology, and robotics that are flooding the media almost daily. What's happening there in robotics is, we feel, long overdue. It's awesome and exciting. Finally, we offer up a brief on precision engineering that we know every roboticist will absolutely love. Precision from the two Henrys, that's Henry Ford versus Henry Royce, as told by the historian Simon Winchester. Okay, let's get on with the news. We all know about robots working in familiar settings like factories and warehouses, putting things together or shipping other things off to customers. However, these days, robots are seeping into all kinds of unexpected jobs, large and small, like changing tires on automobiles, cleaning giant blades on wind farms, stirring molten metal at 2,000 degrees centigrade, or picking up radioactive waste. Here are two new ones, courtesy of What's New in Robotics from our blog partnership with Roboteek, leader in automating work with easy-to-use cobot solutions. Here are two robot jobs flying way under the radar. The first one we call robots, needles, and babies. The World Health Organization says that about 60 to 80 million couples worldwide, that's 160 million people, have infertility. Around 17.5% of the adult population, roughly one in six worldwide, experience infertility, numbers that show the urgent need to increase access to affordable, high-quality fertility care for those in need. The solution? In vitro fertilization, or artificial insemination, referred to as IVF. IVF has a few problems, though. In the U.S., the average cost of one IVF in vitro fertilization cycle can range from $15,000 to $25,000, according to Dr. Jennifer Ashton, ABC News chief, medical correspondent, and board-certified OBGYN physician. Plus, there's the emotional toll, she says, as one woman recounted to ABC. Going through IVF is brutal, isolating, and desperately lonely. It's a breakneck roller coaster ride that whiplashes from hope to despair moment by moment. It's physically, psychologically, and spiritually distressing. Wow, that doesn't say much about IVF, does it? Whew. About 500,000 children are born through IVF globally each year. 500,000 kids from 80 million infertile couples. Not very good numbers. Robots to the rescue. A new age of desktop in vitro fertilization has arrived. The net for couples wanting to yet unable to have a baby, a robot, a needle, and a Sony PlayStation 5 controller just crashed a multi-billion dollar industry with an inexpensive, reliable, and effective substitute. Great news for those countries worried about dwindling populations. A Barcelona, Spain-based startup, Overture Life, has built a robotic system it claims is an initial step to automating in vitro fertilization, or IVF, and potentially making the procedure less expensive and far more common than it is today. Think of a box where sperm and eggs go in and an embryo comes out 5 days later, says Santiago Mune, the prize-winning geneticist who is chief innovation officer at the Spanish company. At New York City's New Hope Fertility Center, a mechanical engineer from Overture, without any medical training, used a robot, a needle holding a sperm cell, and a PlayStation 5 controller to guide the needle, penetrated a live female egg or ovum and injected the sperm. To David Sable, a former fertility doctor who now runs an investment fund, he says IVF has been 40 years of outstanding science and really mediocre systems engineering. Overshear Labs has changed all of that by revolutionizing embryology. Sometimes new jobs for robots are hiding in plain sight. Such is our next What's New in Robotics story that we titled Robot Lost and Found. Everyone loses things at some time or another. Most times we remember enough to eventually find them. Those with dementia, on the other hand, have a more difficult or near impossible chance of recovery. How about a robot that is an excellent lost and found agent? In 2020, estimates of nearly 7 million people, ages 65 or older with varying degrees of dementia in the United States, could well mean lots and lots of missing eyeglasses, medicine bottles, cell phones, wallets, and the dozens of other daily necessities that are small and easily misplaced. Plus, persistent loss of personal items can diminish the quality of life and place burdens on caregivers to recover lost items all day long. Dr. Ali Ayoub and three companions in electrical and computer engineering at Canada's University of Waterloo, Ontario, were struck by the rapidly rising number of people coping with dementia. 9 million Americans could have dementia by 2030, and 12 million by 2040. The three set out to develop a robot helper with skills in Lost and Found. Strangely enough, it was the first ever Lost and Found robot. No one previously had ever attempted to build a robot skilled at finding lost objects. Using a mobile robot manipulator from Fetch Robotics, they created an object detection algorithm to detect, track, and keep a memory log of specific objects in the robot's camera viewing using stored video. With the robot capable of distinguishing one object from another, it can record the time and date when an object enters or leaves its field of view, and thus can indicate when and where it last observed the specific object. Now, shouldn't someone have thought of this sooner? We'd really be remiss here at This Is Robotics if we didn't put some sense into the biggest robotics story of the last several months. That story is, of course, humanoid robots, bipedal humanoid robots, hooking up with AI. The last time there was hoopla and thunder about humanoids was back in 2015, when the DARPA Challenge saw gawky humanoid robots falling all over each other trying to open a door, use power tools, or drive a golf cart. Those days, my friends, are long gone. Our story is called Humanoid Robots and AI Cross the Rubicon Together, the Point of No Return. Of course, the Rubicon is north of Rome, and that's where the Roman legions had to stay by law and never cross the Rubicon and come into Rome. Until, that is, Julius Caesar did it, and he wanted to become emperor, which he did. So crossing the Rubicon is the point of no return for Julius Caesar, as well as for humanoid robots and AI together. Two interesting developments in the world of humanoid robotics. Number one, ever since Elon Musk jumped into the bipedal humanoid race, his presence has throttled up and invigorated the entire humanoid scene. Elon set the height and capabilities, even the price of Optimus. And now everyone in the race seems to be following suit. Number two, AI. Generative AI. Where once people were frightened of humanoid robots taking jobs and more, they now seem to be frozen in fear over generative AI. And with humanoid robots and AI converging, the specter of the twin horror of humanoids high on AI running amok amongst us is scaring more than a few. Some have visions or nightmares that the age of the very eloquent replicant, Roy Batty, isn't very far off.
Quite an experience to live in fear, isn't it? That's what it is to be a slave.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain. Time to die.
2023 has proven to be a momentous year for humanoid robotics and AI. Here to enlighten us that the aforementioned Mr. Batty is very far off, and also to put some perspective into what has happened during 2023, is Oliver on AI.
The Tesla Optimus robot is going to have a lot more competition because OpenAI, through their startup fund, alongside other investors, put $23.5 million into a company out of Norway called 1X Technologies. Now, 1X Technologies used to be called Haloti Robotics, and they were actually established in 2014. And they built this robot, but without legs. It was basically running on these wheels. They also had a video where they showed Eve baking cookies, so using their two robot arms to do all these little manipulation tasks in the kitchen. So this is their new one that they're going to be dropping in summer of 2023, and it's a bipedal robot. Bipedal just means two legs for locomotion, like a bicycle too, and then pedal, they call the legs pedals. Quadrupeds are like robot dogs. So this is the founder of 1X, and this is their original model, Eve, which is now in production. They used to be an electric motor company, and then they realized, hey, we're making these really lightweight, efficient electric motors. What's the best application for this? Let's shoot for the moon and try to build humanoid robots. So this is their version that was on display at ICRA in 2019, the International Conference for Robotics and Automation. And they have an estimated price of $150,000 that they were selling this as. So here's the robot right here, and you can see the base was pretty much just two wheels, and they had a third balancing wheel in the back, and it would bend at the knees kind of to pick up objects like boxes, and it would also have autonomous like security guarding features they were trying to sell it. They said they had a partnership with ADT to provide Eve, their original robot with these wheels, as an autonomous patrol guard through office buildings and things like that, where Eve would roll up to people, kind of scan their IDs, do facial recognition, do object detection, move packages. So OpenAI startup fund is $100 million and Microsoft is one of the biggest investors in there. And one of their main selling points is, hey, we're the best at artificial intelligence. If you find a good application for this, we'd love to partner with you. And I think they're really just trying to learn how to adapt Microsoft as a huge elephant organization to a humanoid robot future. What kind of infrastructure should they be ready for? What kind of computing needs do they need to be ready for? And OpenAI is going to try to figure out through their investment, hey, how can I tweak my language model to interact with humanoid robots? Because they're expecting the humanoid robotics market to be $150 billion by 2035. And that's honestly 12 years away, but it's not too far. Pricing hasn't been unveiled for the Neo, the new bipedal one coming in summer, but the one with the wheels was going for about $150,000. Is Tesla's Optimus really going to be about the price of a Honda Civic, $20,000 to $25,000, like Elon Musk said? In that case, it kind of makes the whole Eve robot, I guess, obsolete. So the question is, how much do you guys think they're going to charge for this Neo robot? Do you guys think we're going to start seeing these robots everywhere? And what's your expected prediction for a timeline on that? So please let me know in the comments. I'm AI with Oliver. We'll make new videos every day. Thanks for watching.
Thank you, Oliver. You can catch up on more from Oliver on AI on his YouTube channel. Here's something that is not as far-fetched as I once thought. Will humans someday merge with humanoid robots in order to escape extinction? Are humans, humanoid robots, artificial intelligence, and biology on a collision course to become a single entity, an alternate race at first, a new branch of humanity? Will humans merge with humanoid robots and then eventually become the only branch of humanity that is still able to exist on planet Earth, especially after climate change, super virulent viruses, pollution, or some other apocalypse has made it impossible for biological humanity to survive? Toss in quantum computing, and all of it may happen sooner than later. Faced with extinction, humanity may well be faced with a decision. Merge with humanoid robots and artificial intelligence, or go extinct. For most of 2023, we've been writing about Asian robotics and the super friendly place it is these days for robotics, automation, and artificial intelligence. We've profiled East Asia with China, Korea, and Japan, swept south to the Three Sisters, Thailand, Vietnam, and Malaysia, and now our timing seems to be perfect with Asia's next robotics behemoth on the rise, India. We took a look and loved what we saw. Is India up next for an automation makeover? It appears so, and Indian robotics is rolling out to the launch pad to drive it all. The International Federation of Robotics agrees. Writing in early May, India's robot boom hits all-time high. The title alone conveys the new acceptance of India as a serious and important tech producer of robotics excellence. The IFR's report notes that India has just made it onto the global top 10 for robotics installations for the very first time. The International Monetary Fund's recent report highlights Asia-Pacific will be the most dynamic of the world's major regions in 2023, predominantly driven by the buoyant outlook for China and India. The Wall Street Journal is calling India China's clear rival for the global manufacturing crown. Overall, according to the publisher's forecast, the size of South and Southeast Asia's industrial robot industry will maintain growth from 2023 to 2032. On the one hand, the lower operating costs in South and Southeast Asian countries attract global industrial robot companies to shift their production capacity to India and Southeast Asia. On the other hand, with the development of auto parts, electronics manufacturing, and logistics industries, the demand for industrial robots in South and Southeast Asia is also growing. And what is all of this economic activity going to need? Well, robots. We even asked the oracle of everything these days, ChatGPT, for its take on Indian robotics. Yes, India certainly has the potential to become a robotics powerhouse, wrote ChatGPT in response to our query. India is already making significant strides in the field of robotics, and the Indian government has recognized the potential of robotics in driving economic growth and technological innovation. India has a large pool of engineering talent and a thriving startup ecosystem that is focused on developing cutting-edge technologies. Someone told me, as an aside, that India has more PhDs than the United States has college graduates. The Indian government has also launched several initiatives to promote the development and adoption of robotics in various sectors, such as healthcare, defense, and manufacturing. ChatGPT went on to write, India has a vast and growing market for robotics, with the country being one of the largest consumers of industrial robots. This creates a favorable environment for the growth of the robotics industry in India, as companies can develop and test their technologies in a local market before scaling up globally. However, there are also challenges that India must overcome to become a robotics powerhouse, says ChatGPT. One of the main challenges is the lack of a robust supply chain for robotics components. Interesting. Which makes it difficult for companies to manufacture and develop high-quality robotics products. Additionally, there's a shortage of skilled workers who can design, build, and maintain robots, which is crucial for the growth of the industry. That is, after this engineering ecosystem gets done building robots, you got to have people to maintain them, to build them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And India's having a tough time getting those kind of individuals into the system. Overall, India has a good chance of becoming a robotics powerhouse. If it can overcome these challenges and continue to invest in research and development, promote innovation, and create a favorable business environment for robotics companies. Links to Asian Robotics Review's India Robots update are in the show notes of today's podcast. A fresh new force is blowing through Indian robotics. Here's something every robotics engineer can appreciate: precision engineering. Historian Simon Winchester has written many great histories over the years. The last one I read was his History of the Oxford English Dictionary, a really great book. However, in 2018, he put out a book titled The Perfectionists, How Precision Engineers Created the Modern World. You should go out and get it. It's a great book. In The Perfectionists, Simon celebrates the unsung breed of engineers who through the ages have designed ever more creative and intricate machines. He takes us on a journey through the evolution of precision, which in his view is the major driver of what we experience as modern life. Our cars, our planes, cell phones, washing machines, computers, every manufactured mechanism, including robots, are all the result of our pursuit of this fundamental concept. Henry Ford and Henry Royce were perfectionists in machine building, but each of the Henrys' views of precision took interesting twists. Here's Simon explaining the difference between the two Henrys in an interview he did on C-SPAN. By the way, neither of the two Henrys was a degreed engineer. Ford only got to the eighth grade, and Royce was an apprentice on a railroad. But they didn't need a degree to become great engineers, did they? For that matter, neither is Elon Musk a degreed engineer, but he's recognized as one of the world's best. The two Henrys were perfectionists with differing ideas of precision engineering. Here's Simon.
Two Henrys, Henry Royce and Henry Ford, both born in 1863, both captivated in youth by the idea of mechanically propelled vehicles. They both owned these French-made, and incidentally, the reason that words like automobile and garage and carburetor and so forth are all French is because the original engineering, of course, originated in France. They both had these machines called De Dion quadricycles, which were effectively two bicycles bolted together with a 10-horsepower, very primitive engine, chains, which propelled these two characters along at high speed, noisily, smokily, no brakes, nothing sophisticated like that. Very dangerous, but both men thought this was wonderful, but both each man had a different view. Henry Royce in Manchester said, I want to perfect this way of driving. I'm going to create the most impeccably engineered automobile that I possibly can. Henry Ford, by contrast, said, we live in an amazing country with astonishing vistas, with forests and Grand Canyons and so forth. I'm going to make a machine which everyone in the country can afford to buy so that he or she can see the magic of this country. And so what I concentrate on are two cars, both made almost exactly the same period, 1908 to 1927. The Rolls-Royce Silver Ghost, which was made in Northern England, also, oddly enough, in Springfield, Massachusetts, and the Ford Model T. They made 8,000 Rolls-Royces, probably the finest machine ever made mechanically, 80% of them still running today, which goes to your point.
Why, it's a reasonable investment.
A very, very good investment, a century on.
This was your point, actually.
My point, was it? Okay. Probably Rolls-Royce PR point as well. Whereas the Ford Model T, also from 1908 to 1927, they produced 16 million of them. And the crucial difference is that, and this is where precision comes in, you'd think of Rolls-Royce as being the apotheosis of precision. But in fact, it wasn't, because they were handmade. So if a part didn't fit properly, the the engineer in charge would simply take a file and file it until it did fit. Whereas in Dearborn, Michigan, with the production lines that Henry Ford created, all the parts, whether it's for a carburetor or brakes or transmissions or whatever, were in hoppers on the floor above the line. And if for some reason they weren't interchangeable, they didn't all exactly fit, one came down the chute into the production line and didn't fit, then all of a sudden the production line would grind to a halt and men would stand around smoking and chatting while someone worked out what had happened. Money would be lost, the line would be interrupted. So precision was a key to making lots of things very cheaply, was not a key to the making of a Rolls-Royce, because we did it as an exercise, not so much in full-scale production line manufacturing, but in craftsmanship. So there was a dichotomy at this point where craft and high-precision engineering left, and that was at the beginning of the last century.
And do you want to mention why it should be a Royce-Rolls as opposed to a Rolls-Royce?
Yes, because, I mean, Henry Royce, laboring away at the mechanics of this thing, would anyone sell them? How am I going to get the word out to the general public? And after several years of failure in this regard, this Mayfair-based swell, the Honourable Charles Rolls, came up to Manchester, saw the early prototypes of the machine, couldn't believe that a car could be so quiet that you could quite literally put a brimful martini glass on the radiator, accelerate the car up to full revs, and it wasn't even a trace of vibration as this mighty engine was roaring underneath, and said to Royce, "I will market your car, but only under the condition that my name, because I'm an aristocrat, should come before yours of a horny-handed son of toil, merely the engineer." And so to this day, when a Rolls-Royce leaves the factory and crew, they're still made, but now, as you probably well know, it's went bankrupt and it's owned by Volkswagen. The engineers, when they say goodbye to a car, don't refer it as a Rolls, or most of us do, but they still call them Royces. So if you meet an engineer, be sure not to use the word Rolls, which they shudder with contempt when they think of it. He was merely a salesman.
Well, dear friends, we've come to the close of another This Is Robotics Radio News podcast. Many thanks for coming. We sincerely hope that you enjoyed your brief stay with us, found the program interesting, and had a few takeaways that will stick in your memory banks and power your day along. Thanks also to Global Robotics for being such a wonderful source for news. As a production of Asian Robotics Review, we hope you visit the site regularly. And please, sign up for our twice-weekly newsletters. It's painless. Just your email is all we need. So long, until next time.
That brings to a close today's edition of Radio News. As always, thank you for your interest and attention. Until our next report, please be sure to click on over to This Is Robotics, the online news column at Asian Robotics Review. Also, look for This Is Robotics Radio News at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Pandora. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, this is Radio News, signing off. Have a great day.